With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Court is in session. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com. This week, I am joined by New York comedian, host of 404ing and Breaking Down the Internet, Pat Bayer.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Brett.
Yeah, how's it going?
Good. So the last episode you'll do will be about News Radio, and then you'll never do it again?
Oh, I wish... That would have been a smarter thing, right? If I had gone in actual chronological order. Because, like, News Radio, I think it was episode 7.
Yeah. Well, but also, like, you can't... You gotta talk about News Radio, because it's amazing. Yeah.
And also, because when I first was like, we're gonna do this podcast, all of my friends was like, I gotta do News Radio.
Yeah.
Because in our circles, that's a very popular show.
Yes. I mean, it's one of the sitcoms I could watch with my dad.
Oh, really?
Which means, like, a lot to me. Those shows that appealed, like, we have somewhat of a similar sense. He's a little bit more broad in his comedy than I am. But, like, my dad watched Conan before I did. Like,
oh, wow.
Because he would wake up, he would fall asleep after work, and then wake up and watch late night shows. And so he loved early Letterman. He loved, like, desk is in the elevator Letterman. And he loved Conan. And so, like... One of the reasons why I'm a comedian the way I am is because my early UCB life, all of my teachers were doing bits on Conan, and so my dad knew that I was doing an okay thing.
That's so great.
Because I'd be like, Dad, watch tonight. My teacher, Sean Connery, is doing a bit on Conan. And he'd be like, oh, I know that guy. Okay.
That's so awesome. What a cool dad.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We watched the first season of the UCB, their sketch show together.
Jeez.
Yeah, I watched Ass Pennies with my dad. This is a fun, stupid thing.
I know, like, News Radio is a very... My parents didn't watch News Radio.
No.
Like, you know, my parents... We watched Friends together.
Yeah.
Which is also great, but, like,
yeah,
they weren't...
different. It's different. They're different kinds of shows.
Yeah.
Especially, like, a smart situational comedy. Like, we watched... I don't know if this episode would count as... one of my favorites of the show, but the show we watched, like, is a great situational comedy.
Yeah, yeah. And your show 404ing and Breaking Down the Internet, I wondered if anyone has ever done a bit about sitcoms.
No, not
ever done, like,
not particularly. So 404ing it is a celebration of the best parts of the internet.
Yeah.
But that also just means what's archived on the internet. So we've done. Someone pretty recently, Chris Straub, who's a webcomic guy, looked at all of the terrible hacking in CBS shows, like NCIS and CSI.
Yeah.
Like, they don't understand how hacking works. The most famous is if two people type on a computer keyboard, it makes anti-hacking run faster.
Yeah.
Or
Zoom to Enhance is like the classic like computer forensics thing. That makes no sense.
So here's a little behind the scenes TV talk. Okay, so a friend of mine was in an episode of one of the Law and Orders. He's playing a like officer. He's in his dress uniform. He's at a computer. He's like a computer science expert or whatever. And so he's doing this stuff. You don't see his hands. You don't see anything. You see him on a computer. You whatever. They added in typing noises because that's background that you, when you think of, I'm working on a computer, everyone thinks of typing, but it's all just using your mouse. He didn't touch the keyboard. They added in sound effects to fill the space. And I love that because I'm just like, I mean, yeah, but also that's just
not how it works.
Not how it works.
But speaking of how things work, that's a horrible transition. That makes no sense. But whatever. This week we are traveling to January 4th, 1984. Terms of Endearment ruled the box office. Say, Say, Say by Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson topped the charts. Choice jam. And NBC aired in the Night Court episode All You Need Is Love. Pat, you must have seen All You Need Is Love before.
I hadn't. So, my Night Court experience, like, I don't think I watched it while it was airing in the 80s. I was born in 1980, so I was a child.
Yeah. This ran for 9 seasons, too, yes. Which always shocks me.
It's a good show. But, like, when I was 4, I wasn't watching Night Court when it debuted. So I watched most of, I think, like, A&E reruns in the afternoon, you know, that kind of a thing. And they don't rerun a lot of season one because, even the photo of the cast of Night Court for the episode
is totally
the
different.
Season two cast or season three cast. It's not the season one cast.
I'm looking at Wikipedia because I want to actually get into, is there a chart? That's what I want.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, because I think it is fascinating how much turnover this show had. So the judge, Harry Anderson, is on the entire time, seasons 1 through 9. Then we have the public defenders, who, episode 1, played by Gail Strickland, a character named Sheila Gardner, pilot episode only.
Yes.
So we saw her entire contribution.
She had she had one of the best laughs of the whole episode.
Oh yeah, it was a great
laugh. And then she is done.
Done. So she got in, got out. She went out on top. Then season one after the pilot, we have Paula Kelly playing Liz Williams.
Yeah.
So then that's it for season one.
Season one, yeah.
Then season two, we had Aaron Foley as Billy Young. And then she's gone.
Billy Young, more famously known as a musician.
Oh, really?
A pretty accomplished musician, yeah.
What was she? What was her?
She's just, I think she's a singer-songwriter that, and has done Broadway, I believe. But I remember being like, oh, yeah, that's not who you think of.
Weird.
Because everyone, you're going to get to her.
Yeah.
Just thinks about Annie Potts.
Marky Post as Christine Sullivan.
Yes.
Seasons 3 through 9.
Yeah.
So this is the character that everyone remembers.
Yes. And I called her Annie Potts, but it's Marky Post.
Because Marky Post, you were saying she was on The Fall Guy.
Yes.
At the time.
Couldn't do the show.
They wanted her.
So the story goes, because we'll also talk about how there's this. You can't do a situational comedy without having two people who are into each other.
Yeah.
And you watch them try to date. Maybe date.
Will they?
So, in the first episode, you've got our court clerk and our judge. And that's setting up really right away. These are the two characters that are going to be interested in each other. And then, clearly, they don't do that because she's gone after the first season. Replaced with Charlie Robinson.
Yes.
As Mac Robinson for the rest of the series. Also, came in under a weird circumstance.
What was his?
He was in a show that ran for one season that people didn't like, was canceled, and replaced by Night Court.
Oh.
And then a year later, he was on Night Court.
Yes, I saw that when I was doing trivia for this. And then also the female bailiffs had a high turnover. Selma Diamond played Selma Hacker in seasons 1 and 2. Died. Florence Halep came on as Flo Kleiner. Season 3. Died. So they decided, let's get a younger female bailiff. So that's when they cast Marsha Warfield as Roz Russell. And she was on for 4 through 9.
And that's who you think of when the season 4, when she joins the cast, that's the cast you think of. Some people do think about Sheila because she's just such an iconic character.
Yeah.
Of just this, like, cigarette in her mouth, like, is her part of the opening song. Like, she's pretty iconic. But obviously, like, the three characters that I think are the most, like, when I think of Night Court is, obviously, you think of Judge Harry.
Yeah.
You think of Bull, and you think of Dan.
Yeah. Those are the only three that are on the entire time.
They're an entire run. There's no changeover there. I thought for a minute maybe that Bull had left by the end, but he stuck around.
And it took them till season four to get their solid cast in, but then they still had six seasons of that consistent cast, which is crazy how long this show ran.
Because this
is only my second ever episode of Night Court, which is baffling because I feel like it is right up my alley.
Yeah.
As one of the few 80s sitcoms that is a workplace sitcom and not a family sitcom. Mm-hmm. So therefore, on board. I mean, this episode was directed by James Burrows, who's Cheers. Yep. Like, yes. Mr. Cheers.
Mr. Cheers.
You know, Mr. Great. Mr. Wonderful. So I never really watched it because there's a weird sitcom black hole for me where if I was too young to watch it as it was new, but if the show was too new that it couldn't be on Nick at Night,
I missed it, which
is why like Cheers fell through the cracks for me, Newhart fell through the cracks, and Night Court fell through because I didn't really get into sitcoms until maybe 92, 93 with like your TGIS, probably like 92. And then I didn't get into, like, adult, like, legitimate sitcoms until, like, the 94, 95 season when Friends came on, because I watched Friends from the beginning. So, when Night Court was on those reruns on A&E in the 90s, I just didn't pay it any mind.
Yeah.
Even though I should have.
It was also, like, for me, it was also before the WB, before, you know, the WB and UPN bought all the local channels and became their own channels, which are now CW.
Yeah.
So Channel 5 here, which is Fox in New York, I also got in Connecticut. And so Fox 5 and then Channel 61, which eventually I think became a WB network, aired a lot because they were like local. They didn't have original content.
Yeah.
They had original, they had news. They had actual local news and they had some local sports, but most of it was just movies and reruns, and then they would pick up syndicated shows.
Yeah.
That's where you watched Hercules, was on Channel 11 is how I watched Hercules. So I saw a lot of Night Court in the early 90s, even before A&E. So that's how I got to watch that show. But they don't show the early seasons because it's not what you remember.
Yeah.
Marky Post is important for that show because that's when the actual romance stuff starts.
I'm very interested to get... I want to watch... One of our mutual friends, John Gutierrez, I mean, this is his favorite show of all time. So, John, if you're listening, you're going to talk about Night Court at some point.
I believe that... Is it her name? Billy Young was the artist, the person that
before you. Yeah, I think so. Aaron Young, Billy Young. Or Aaron Foley, played by Billy Young.
Yeah, so she was the first, I think, when they were like going to push for... Because I think season two, there is no romantic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was the attempt to have some sort of romance. And supposedly, Marky Post was always going to be there and it was always going to be about her. But then that doesn't quite track for me because the first season, why have why have a romance angle at all with the clerk who then you replace?
Yeah.
It's strange.
I like the cast turnover in that they actually diversified the show in their cast turnovers.
Oh, very much so.
Which, you know, growing up, you know, in Tennessee with Southern conservative family, watching shows in the 90s, there was actually like a little bit of weird segregation in sitcoms. Like either a show was 100% white or 100% black.
Yes.
And there's like the fact that News Radio had like one black woman on it. I remember as a kid being like, oh, this is so different from Friends and Seinfeld and Full House.
Mac Robinson goes a long way in making that show better.
Yeah.
Because Mac is one, doesn't mind that Harry is a weirdo.
Yeah.
He likes it. He likes that the judge is fun, and he likes a fun courtroom. And it's so nice because so many of the characters in this episode of season one have to be... Everyone is a straight man except for Bull.
Yeah.
Bull is legitimately... And also the other bailiff, who just has one line in the whole episode and literally doesn't say anything. She just says one thing. And it's very funny.
Yeah.
But like, everyone else has to react to how weird Harry is because we have to sell the show that, hey, look at this young, weird, magic-loving judge.
Yeah. Let's get deep into the episode.
But I did want to say, we'll get deep in. But the point I was making was that Mac Robinson likes everything that's happening.
Which is good.
And then also, he's a Vietnam vet. Oh. And having a black man, Vietnam vet, with a wife that I want to say his wife is Asian in the show.
Oh.
Don't quote me on that. That might be another sitcom that I'm mixing it up with. But his family life is very important to him. Like, he has, like, a lot going for him. And also, he's, like, he'll call people out on bullshit, but he's more than happy to just be there and be happy.
Which is a good scene partner to have.
Yeah.
It's like in an improv show, you want that kind of energy.
He's the sidekick in a show that needed a sidekick.
Yeah. So yeah, this week on the show, we were talking about the Night Court episode, All You Need Is Love. It is the first episode of season one. It was written by Reinhold Weege and directed by James Burrows. Here's how iTunes describes the episode. A young and unusual judge arrives in Manhattan's night court and begins deciding cases in a most unusual manner, much to the horror of his court clerk and all else in the courtroom. Pat, how accurate is that description?
Pretty accurate.
Yeah, pretty accurate. He uses unusual twice.
Yeah.
In a sentence.
So, I mean, that's the thing. This is the pilot episode, right?
Yep.
We gotta sell the show, right? It is a workplace sitcom that takes place at night in night court, which they spend no time talking about why it makes it different.
Yeah, like, they don't even really explain what night court is.
And they need to. Well, the main problem is they can't, even though there is a prostitute in this episode, they can't just go, drug dealers and prostitutes also need to be arraigned.
Yeah.
but it is that, the thing is, like, for a situational comedy, it is an interesting workplace.
Because it
allows you for, like, they don't, like, even though this is their, the case they look on is the attempted murder, everyone knows it's not really attempted murder, it allows them to do things that aren't as heavy as, like, L.A. Law.
Yeah.
You know, or other, even Boston Public had some real shit.
Yeah.
It's more Ally McBeal than L.A. Law.
I've seen two episodes, because for work I have a column called That Gay Episode, where I look at classic sitcom, pre-1997 sitcom episodes that deal with gay characters, and there is a season two episode of Night Court, where it is, it's two people come in, and it is a guy beat up another guy with a plastic dog bone, because his show dog, or his mutt, had sex with the other guy's show dog, show poodle, and now the show poodle only wants to fuck that other dog. So the owner of the show poodle.
That's really convoluted. Yeah, unnecessary.
So I think that's a silly problem.
Yes, a very silly problem.
And I think the setup of this show, I think, is probably conducive towards sillier problems.
And it makes sense why you would decide that everyone is the straight man except for some of those minor characters, and then the judge being a weirdo.
Yeah, there was in this episode, the gallery, just the people that I guess are just in there watching the night court,
yep.
Which is the thing you can do.
Yes, you can
and
just
I
go to court.
And I don't know why, I feel like I should do that at some point. It's like a real New York thing.
Yeah. It's a weird thing where, obviously, it's because it's a judge, the jury box is filled with people waiting for their arraignment.
Yeah.
They have a fun little bit of business with a guy that Harry knows. They don't explain why. They're just trying to build up that he's young and experienced and unorthodox. Because he is, and that's kind of the main thrust of it.
Yeah.
What's really weird about it is the character Dan, played by John Larroquette, who is, in this cast, the most accomplished comedic performer. And it's so strange to watch him, like, be so stuffy in a character that becomes more unlikable, but lecherous.
I equate him only just, I think, just through pop culture osmosis. I equate him a lot with Bill McNeil.
Okay.
Does he get into, like, that kind of
pompous,
lecherous, blowhardy
a
kind
little bit
of,
blowhardy. Like, so, like, I mean, they tried with the John Larroquette show. They tried to spin off to him as a leading man.
Right.
And in the show, this pilot episode, he's just stuffy, by the books. His first lines are about the judge, when they're talking about who's the new judge. I hope
he's got a background in criminal law.
I hope he plays chess.
And I don't know the character Dan Fielding to ever play chess.
He comes in smoking a pipe, too. He also, when I'm thinking about this episode, no one really does anything except for Harry, the judge.
He has a very fun, John Larroquette has a very funny line where he comes in and he just goes, something about his shirt. His shirt got ripped. And
I loved my shirt.
He just reacting, and he's like playing the straight man, which he does later in the shows. He certainly is a bit of a voice of reason. He's always frustrated by Harry's choices, but they didn't give him anything to do, and I don't think they wanted to give anyone anything to do in this episode, because they were like, because really, there's only two characters that are established as the character they will be beyond this episode.
Right.
Judge Harry is Judge Harry.
Yeah.
Bull is more menacing than Bull is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the laughs are the fact that Bull is such a gentle giant.
He's so tall.
His voice, it changes. The vocal energy of that character changes throughout the show. He becomes dumber, way dumber. This is a character, in this first episode, I need you to understand, people listening, Bull seems like if Lurch spoke.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing in the first episode, which may have been his choice, it may have been the notes, I don't know what it was, but instead he becomes like a guy that must have got dropped on his head.
Right.
And that he becomes like really stupid, but lovable. And like, you want good things for Bull. You want Bull to like get married and be with someone and like
just succeed, live your
succeed
life.
Succeed and live your life and like move up and move to day court if you want or whatever. But like, in this episode, you're just like, this is a legit frightening character.
Yeah. So, like, this episode is, as we discussed, it's like the setting up of what the series is going to be. And basically, our newcomer entry into the world of the Night Court is Judge Harry T. Stone. He comes in under, like, everyone's, like, frantically, like, where's the judge? Looking for the judge. He's supposed to be here. He's a new judge. He comes in, like, they think he's just delivering a box of junk for the new judge.
Because he's just real casual. Yeah. He's a young man.
He's a young, cool
judge. He's a young,
judge.
Maybe, I don't know how old he is, man.
He is one of those, he's like that, he's like Dana Carvey. He's like this nebulous, he could either be 20 or 40.
This show ran 9 seasons, and he's the same age in all of them.
Yeah.
He doesn't, his hair, he loses, because the show runs from the 80s into the 90s, he loses his early 80s hair.
Yeah.
He stops putting product in it, and it's less poofy.
Does he go through a mullet phase? I feel like he has to go through, like, a big hair
I don't
phase,
think
he's...
No, because the thing is, his hair is big in that, and is it later.
Okay. I mostly knew Harry Anderson, who plays him, from Dave's World.
Okay, yes.
Because, again, since my sitcom awakening was in the, like, early mid-90s, I was a big Dave's World watcher.
Of course.
Loved me some... And I always still get Dave Barry and Harry Anderson mixed up. Like, for a long time, I thought they were the same person.
Oh, you thought that he just got himself the lead role in a sitcom based on his life?
Yeah. Which is not that far-fetched.
No, not necessarily.
But this follows his... Like, Harry Anderson, at this point, was mostly known for being Harry the Hat on Cheers, who was, like, the con guy. And he's kind of, like, this... Like, it's basically like if Harry the Hat became a judge and therefore had like the moral backbone of a judge, because Harry the Hat's a con artist.
Yeah.
But it's because Harry Anderson is a close-up magician, like also by trade.
Yes.
They just make
he
him
is a
do
comedian magician.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that in the very first pilot episode, you don't often see this in sitcoms. Most of the time you can throw away the first season and it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
There's two things that happen in this episode that are important. One is, it's the only time they explain how he became a judge.
Right, which they give two overlapping explanations.
Yes.
One being that, before he arrives, is it Lana and Dan, I think, are talking? And they're like, how is he getting here? They're like, well, apparently like the mayor was on his way out. And
I don't know. Our ex-mayor just filled all the vacancies in the court on his last day in office. Nobody knows who was appointed or where they were assigned.
Trivia.
It's the 80s, so that may be possible.
Trivia, that happened.
Did it?
This is based on a true story.
I wonder if that's how you got... Yeah, like...
This is apparently in L.A., there was a judge who lost re-election, and on his last day as... Or a mayor. And on his last day as mayor, he... spitefully filled all of the positions with people that were not qualified.
That is a lot of spite.
So that is an early... I was going to bring that up at the trivia section, but obviously I have to mention it now.
Yes.
So that's one justification.
So that justification, and then later is they were calling out to people on a Sunday, which also fits into the, like, my last day kind of thing a little bit. Like, hey, this is the end of my thing. And he was on the bottom of the list, but he was available because it's the 80s, so people aren't calling... people's cell phones.
Yeah, it's like the, who was home, and he was home, and that's why he got it.
Yeah.
So it's an overlapping of events.
And probably neither are 100% true, and I'm sure there's another episode where they really get
to it.
He
makes a good point of, like, because he says this as a thing, because everyone is so frantic about him being in there, and they're kind of really panicked about it.
Yeah.
And he kind of gives that example, that this is why I'm a judge, it's kind of like a weird, like, like kind of like an ain't I a stinker, or like you're stuck with me, like kind of thing. But at the end, when he's one-on-one with
Lana,
he says, like, but you know, I was still on the list.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still
qualified. I'm the bottom of the list, but...
but I'm still on it. I was qualified enough to be on it, so I know what I'm doing, and, like, trust me. Which I thought was, like, a cool...
it's a cool end. Cool, it's a cool, like, a little bit of a almost dramatic moment in the show. The other thing is, that character loves Barry Manilow. And Mel Torme. He loves Mel Torme, and that is a reoccurring reference throughout the whole show. Mel Torme eventually does the show
because
of years and years of him. But it's like the first episode, it's just like a weird thing.
That's
like
great.
A weird almost throwaway. But it legitimately is part of his character.
Yeah.
He's a magician, close-up magic magician judge who loves Mel Torme. And then Mel Torme is on the show.
That's so great.
Eventually.
I want to talk about the theme song in the opening.
Oh.
Because...
ba-da-da.
It is very, very good. I wrote down, like... It's the SNL opening.
Yeah.
Like, the opening part of it is very much, like, the exact way that SNL openings have always...
And also, for this episode in particular, but most episodes, all you're getting of New York is that opening.
Yeah.
You're getting the subway. It's very, like, 80s. You're getting
street people smoking. Like,
okay, so in the dramatic moment of this episode where we're looking at one case, which is unusual, there's this, like, moment where this woman is like, I love him. And I wouldn't try to kill him.
Yeah.
In the background, in the front row of the gallery, is the most cartoonish hobo.
Yeah.
He's got a half... cigar. He's like, he doesn't have makeup. He should have rosy cheeks.
Yeah.
It's just like it's just a hobo. And it's like, and that's where the New York comes in, is all of the, like, weird.
Yeah, there's
like, there's a pimp.
Yeah.
The polyester man who's like, you haven't been listening to her at all. Like, that's just a black man in a, like, blue
polyester
suit. Like,
and sitting next to him is, like, a punk guy
in,
with, like, Jubilee-style black, like, big sunglasses and, like, a red leather jacket.
I have to imagine that the casting for this, that got to do all the background, had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing I was getting to earlier, is, like, the gallery... is its own character.
Yeah.
Like, there's a very... Parks and Rec is what I always go to, where, like, they make Pawnee feel like it is a character in the show, because you know how the people act, you know, like, how weird, and, like, they're a very specific kind of weird. And just in this one episode, the gallery gets so into this one case like it was a soap opera, to where they're, like, you know, shouting at them like they were on a movie screen.
Yeah. And then he goes, no more outbursts. And then someone raises his hand, and he's wearing, like... it, like, clearly,
a
like,
robe.
Just, like, yeah, he robed that, like, he just got out of the hospital or something.
Like, yes, the man in the robe.
The man in the back in the bathroom. Are oohs and ahs okay?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a good line. There are a couple very good lines in it. It's this very weird thing where it doesn't feel like any of these characters, the main characters, or Dan Fielding might feel like a guy who moved to New York, but none of them feel like New Yorkers. Which is what I think, where Mac feels like a New Yorker.
Yeah.
When he comes in, he feel like, and then our later bailiffs feel more like New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And I think that helps a lot to just kind of build the world of the show.
There's
more.
Just a lot of... I noticed, like, there was just a lot of blonde ladies in this episode.
Yeah,
Sheila and Lana. Sheila, who's only in this one episode, and Lana look very similar. They're just, like, kind of, like, moderately uptight-looking blonde 80s ladies.
Yeah.
Sheila, more uptight. Like, she's wearing the, like, business power suit that goes all the way up, like, buttoned all the way up, like, kind of thing.
Well, because they have to separate those two characters.
Yeah.
Because Lana, in the last scene... is, like, clutching her blouse in a way that's, like, very, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want us to think that she's getting into him. Okay.
Yeah, having sure. a very emotional
this
moment.
This is the show. Okay.
So the case that they try is a husband and wife. The husband was stepping out on her with a prostitute.
She catches him. Yeah.
She then, like, fires a gun at them, doesn't hit them, misses by a mile, they say, but they are still trying her for attempted murder.
Yeah.
And so that's why everyone gets super into it as, like, a soap opera.
Because it's, like, an older couple. It's an older white couple that, like, clearly still has feelings for each other, but this is a messy thing. And then, obviously, a crime was committed, so it's what's going to happen with this. Like... and then also it is a very strange thing for that to be the case that he's very unorthodox with.
Yeah.
Which is like an attempted murder case.
Yeah, his whole thing is, okay, now we're going to go recess.
We will now take a short recess. During that time, I order the defendant, Mrs. Kerr, and her husband, Mr. Kerr, and the attorneys involved to go to a nearby restaurant. Sit down, have a cup of coffee, relax, try to work out this little thing.
And then that's when we cut back from commercial or whatever, and after people look at moments, Dan and Sheila come back after, you know, supervising.
It's so weird to hear you say Sheila, because that character doesn't exist. Yeah. Like, that character should not exist in the show.
Yeah.
She's there. As soon as she's gone, the attorney that is, you know, like, acting, not the prosecutor, but the defense attorney, the state court-appointed attorney, is the love interest. As soon as she's gone, her role becomes a love interest
character. And we're still two people away from getting Marky Post, which is also crazy because they kept turning him over.
But, like, that's such a strange thing. But, yeah, they come back. They're, for some reason, their clothes are all ripped up. But then the husband and wife are fine.
Yeah.
So they just were, like, ripping the other...
So I'm now picturing they're at the restaurant, and the two of them start getting heated, so the two attorneys get in between them, maybe? And so in between, like, trying to keep them apart, their clothes are getting ripped cartoonishly.
Cartoonishly.
Like...
Because Dan Fielding still has his tie and his jacket, but his shirt got ripped.
They pulled the shirt off from underneath.
Well, then he had to put the jacket back on. So a thing I do want to bring up that isn't necessarily true about later seasons is in this episode... Sight gags are incredibly funny and are so much of this episode are just like reaction shots, whatever. There's Bull standing underneath the lights.
Yeah,
there's,
which looks like has like weird, like glowy antler things.
There's magic tricks. There's a gag with cards. Like there's a lot of visual jokes in it. And there's a lot of sight gags, which is kind of unusual for... A sitcom like that.
I'm pretty sure, I think in my research, I'm pretty sure Reinhold Weege, the writer of this episode, the guy that created Night Court, came from Barney Miller.
Okay.
Which you can very much see, kind of like how Star Trek The Next Generation, the frustrations of that show begat Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Ronald D. Moore was like, I just want them to run out of food, or fight more, or dear God, let me do anything. Battlestar Galactica, so stressful. You could see how Barney Miller, which is like, one location, a lot more gritty, you know, a lot more, like, issues, dramatic. How Reinhold Weege is like, I just want to do close-up magic.
Yeah.
I just want to get silly.
What if more characters were happy?
Yeah. And so you can see how, like, Night Court is birthed from possibly frustrations from being on Barney Miller.
Yeah, totally possible. And it's an interesting thing of, like, Harold Stone, Judge Harold Stone. It's just, like, wearing jeans, and it's, like, young, and, like, they're just...
Sweatshirt.
They're doing everything they can to make you think, like, this is why you should watch episode two.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, we realized how fucking funny Bull is, so...
Yeah.
Here's Bull. Let's do it. Let's do this. Let's do that. Okay. There's a bunch of stuff they don't know yet. They don't know how to do this, or they don't know, like... Can we make prostitutes funny? Well, we did okay in this episode.
Oh, yeah. She had a good... wait, did I write down what she said? Like,
heads, I just fine you. Tails, you go to jail.
Wait.
Heads again. It's your lucky day.
Could be yours, too.
There was a heads or tails, and like, should we flip to see what's
so
up later?
So there was I want to talk about that heads or tails thing, because he starts like determining judges. First, he comes back as like, heads, I'm going to remain a judge. Tails, I leave right now. Heads, I'm a judge. And then he keeps flipping a coin for things, and finally he sets down, like, okay, now we're going to actually try the case, and immediately, in the line that was pretty great...
All right, then let's flip the coin again. Let's decide the Kerr case.
The defense wants head, Your Honor.
And then everyone is, like, laughing. Like, it is so funny, to me, in a sitcom... Where sitcoms fail is when they put a laugh track in,
yeah,
but the other characters don't laugh. And everyone knows that this was either embarrassing or hilarious. She's like, what did I just say?
Yeah.
And it's this, like, pretty risque joke for 1984.
Yeah.
To be like, and then, like, yeah, the peanut gallery, the hobo in the background is just like, oh. Like, everyone's just like, we know what you were trying to say, but, like...
Yeah.
That's a real... It's her only thing in the episode other than just being, like, flustered.
Yeah, and that's a really good joke. It's a shame. I don't know. I haven't seen more episodes, so maybe it's not a shame that she doesn't stick around.
Yeah.
I do wonder why she wasn't brought back. You know, it's always fascinating to me when pilots lose lose a character. Like,
well, I think a lot of times it's feedback, and they're like... In my opinion, anyway. Sometimes you're like, oh, we... need something in this show to fill it out.
There's it's also interesting that because there was a significant cold open, like it lasted a little bit. It was a pretty significant scene before the so pilot episode, and in that cold open, there you're not even sure who the main characters are going to be because the first character you see is a painter
and
who
Lana.
Who is looking out the window of the new judge's office because he's watching a couple fuck across the street.
He has more jokes.
And he has a lot of good jokes, and he's a good actor. He leaves, and then eventually we see, like, a delivery guy?
Oh, no. I'm so glad you brought him up, because I want to talk about how they introduced the main character of a different sitcom that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So, when you think delivery person, in this modern context... And it's the racial feelings I feel here. This is going to be somebody that is not white.
Yeah.
You don't think of an Italian-American...
Like a leather jacket.
Leather jacket, long hair, but with a bald spot when he leaves.
Yeah.
White dude delivering a random package, even as a messenger going from office to office. Who the fuck is this character?
He's got a lot going on.
He is, in my mind, that is somebody who, like, auditioned for the show and didn't get it.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we got a thing for you.
Yeah. And so, like, when you...
What is that character? Why is the character in that episode?
It's so weird that painter guy and this delivery boy guy are, in that one scene, more defined and funnier characters than...
Lana.
Sheila. Lana.
Dan.
Even Selma, to a degree.
Dan, who is in every episode.
And so when the opening credits started, I was like, I don't know if these guys might be main characters in the pilot. They weren't. They never show up again.
No.
But they were way more interesting.
They are given stuff to do, which is why I think, like, it's a very strange thing. Like, one of the reasons why I assume that Sheila is not there anymore is because when they get rid of Lana and bring in Mac, they need a love interest. That woman isn't the love interest.
Yeah.
That woman, I think, goes on to, like...
The second, because Sheila was only in the pilot.
Yes.
So then Sheila is going to get
the other one. Like, that character, that's not the role, that's not the actress for that. And you assume whenever they were going to bring our main characters together, like the new characters or whatever. It's just this weird thing where they had to shuffle everything around.
A lot of shuffling.
But, like, it's weird because, like I said, I don't remember anything from the first season.
Yeah.
So it's very strange to watch these characters, some of these characters not be the characters that I know. Like, Dan is not the character that I know.
It doesn't really do that much.
And doesn't do much at all. Which is also very strange because, as I said, other than Harry, he is the most accomplished person in, like...
Yeah.
As an actor, like...
John Larroquette has a new show coming out this fall.
Like...
With Bobby Moynihan and one of the kids from IT.
Oh, is he on that show?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in Bobby's show.
This is a tangential thing, but he's the older version of Bobby Moynihan, and John Larroquette is a solid foot taller than Bobby Moynihan. Like, Bobby is...
Wait, he's like Bobby Moynihan in the future?
Yeah, because it's called like Me, Myself, and I or
yes,
something.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like Bobby Moynihan as a younger kid, which is played by, I think, the hypochondriac from It, the new
okay.
It.
Okay.
I'm just recognizing him from the posters. I'm pretty sure that's him. And then his older version is John Larroquette. And like, I can kind of see where like Bobby Moynihan would grow into John Larroquette, like face-wise, maybe. But like, John Larroquette, they're going to have to do some Apple Box or explain. Because Bobby is 5'8".
Yeah. Bobby's like, not a tall man.
He's not much taller than me. Yeah. Like, I think he's probably like 5'8", maybe.
Yeah, 5'9", on a good day.
Yeah. John Larroquette's like 6'3", 6'.
See, I didn't even know, like, the only ads I've seen for that show have just been Bobby as an inventor, dad.
Oh.
Like, bringing his kid to school, and there's a joke where he's like, you live in a garage. He goes, it's a two-car garage. And I'm like, that's pretty funny.
Is it a multicam show?
I think so.
Oh, see,
and there's a shot of him driving a minivan with his daughter. And it's a bad joke, but it's like, it tells you what the show is. Where she's like, can I ask you something? He goes, anything. Except lady stuff. Because, oh, I'm not ready. And I'm like,
Bobby.
I don't know. We're friends with Bobby. Whatever. Big deal. John Larroquette is... incredible and is great. Dan Fielding is a great character eventually of like this, like, because he's a prosecutor, he wants results, he's an assistant district attorney, like he wants to move up, he has ambitions, he's the only character in the show with ambition, but he's also like gets to be kind of lecherous and like, you know, like there's always this thing where he'll say something like really like, oh, we're gonna do this and blah blah blah, and then like two ladies will walk and go, hi Dan, and he'll be like, hi ladies, and they're like clearly prostitutes, like,
yeah,
and it's your thing where you're like, okay, like that's the character that he's always like. There's a lot of like him noticing cleavage in later seasons where he's just like, and he's such a tall man that him looking down,
yeah,
like
this is a very tall show too.
Yes, I mean,
like, Bull being so tall actually makes Harry and Dan seem average height.
Yes,
but I'm pretty sure like Harry Anderson is also very tall.
I mean, it's balanced well because everyone is fucking tall. I think Sheila's tall too. Like, I think they just cast a lot of tall people.
Yeah, I would not,
which also makes the anytime any of the women bailiffs on the show in the history of the show were all very small,
which makes them
way funnier.
There was a really, the funny line that Selma gets in this episode is like,
I had a husband just like that.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I had to shoot him too.
This is pretty great.
It's good. She has that line, she has two lines. She has that line, and then when they're holding the husband and wife back, and he like calls her like something or other, he like insults, he has some weird thing where he insults like the, because I guess DNA strains were a big cultural touchstone. He says like your whole family's like got bad DNA and they look like slinkies.
Oh yeah.
Which was like, oh, that's like clever.
Yeah.
And then she's like, she can't think of an insult, and then like she gets one from the what's her name?
Sheila or no?
No, Stella.
Selma.
Selma. Selma gives her
Scuzzball.
Like, Scuzzball.
Yeah.
Scuzzball. And it's like a funny joke.
Yeah. So she's good.
Yeah.
And I do love her in the opening credits with the cigarette hanging from her mouth.
Yes.
It's pretty great. So let's move on to the trivia with some facts about this episode.
All right.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pretty light on facts, actually, because season one of Night Court was not one of the top 30 most watched programs of that season, so I don't know how many people watched it, but I know that it was not the top 30.
I could see that. I could see Night Court not necessarily telling you why you should watch it.
Yeah, and it was also a mid-season replacement, so yeah. I think season one is only like 10 episodes. Yeah, it's very short. Debuted in January, so it was like a filler.
Which is why they couldn't get certain people, right. Because the show it replaced, the show that Charlie Robinson was on, was the first half of that season.
Right. Yeah.
So, then they get him, which is just such a weird thing. That's such a strange thing.
So, the top five shows of the 83-84 TV season were, number five, Simon and Simon.
Okay.
Four, The A-Team.
Yes.
Three, Dynasty.
Of course.
Two, 60 Minutes.
Really?
Yep. And one, Dallas.
Okay.
So that is a...
60 Minutes being so high on that list tells you where we were at as a culture as far as news goes.
Stays high.
We just didn't have... CNN wasn't a thing yet.
Also, that top five is very much no wonder Night Court wasn't one of the most watched shows, because that's a very much... We want to spend an hour with some overdramatic characters.
Sitcoms didn't rule the school, and sitcoms always had their place.
Yeah.
But in the 80s... You think of some of the bigger ones, but they're not, which is also how you can have a show exist for so long, because there isn't, must-see TV isn't a thing yet.
Right, yeah.
You don't need, your actors aren't making $1 million an episode.
Yeah, so they just get by.
Which would be better for all these shows that weren't Seinfeld and Friends. Just Shoot Me would have had another 8 seasons in the 80s.
Yeah,
but also, Just Shoot Me ran for a very long time.
You just don't know because they kept moving it around.
No one you know, it's on no one's list of their favorite shows. Unless you're a big Brian Posehn fan, then you're of course.
Just Shoot Me was
good. I love Just Shoot Me.
Steve Levitan, he's now, he did Modern Family after Just Shoot Me.
That show isn't remembered.
Right, and also Drew Carey's show ran for 230-something episodes.
That show must have been cheap to make.
They screwed themselves because ABC, at the height of its popularity in season 5 or so, ABC made a deal for 5 more years.
Oh wow, okay.
And then immediately after that, it tanked in the ratings, and so ABC just got stuck with having to make 3 more seasons of Drew Carey's show. Which is why they burned off all the final episodes in the summer. They just were just trying to get through it.
So the boss on that show isn't British.
Wait.
He's an American.
Wait, Craig Ferguson or...
No. There's another guy.
Oh, okay.
There's another... Not Craig Ferguson. No.
He's Scottish.
I know. He's Scottish. No, there's a couple things in that show that are just very... Well, it's also the weird Who's Line Is connections in the show where they let them do a lot of weird stuff in that show.
Yeah.
I guess because they were stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, also, to sidetrack into Drew Carey's show, which I hope that I can do at some point if I can ever track it down, because you cannot find it literally anywhere, not even on DVD. I loved, the first, 3 or 4 years of Drew Carey's show. I remember it was one of my favorite shows as a kid because it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
They did weird jokes. They took a lot of weird... They did a lot of weird serialized storytelling, but also did a lot of weird fourth wall breaking with the April Fool's episodes.
There was a lot of
Who's Line episodes.
Write-in and will choose things episodes. Yeah. There were a lot of break the characters. There was the episode. Yeah, there was the episode where they broke out into Whose Line. So they like made certain characters from Whose Line like reoccurring characters for the episode.
Yeah.
So they could have them in it.
Yeah.
And then you have like, what's the name of the guy that was also in Office Space? The actor who's in the show.
Diedrich Bader?
Diedrich Bader. Who is not a Whose Line dude.
Right.
Who is clearly so nervous.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell, which is so weird for a show that's a sitcom, you can tell that he's like, oh no, yeah, I have to do Whose Line stuff. I am a trained actor.
And he's so funny.
But like, he's so nervous, which is such a funny part of that show.
To link back to the Frasier episode, he was in the Frasier episode I did with Winston Knoll, I think episode 10 of this podcast. Diedrich Bader is in a guest spot on that role, and it's before Drew Carey, like right before Drew Carey. And me and Winston were like, oh, I think he was just cast because he was a handsome actor type. Before he got on Drew Carey, he was handsome actor type, so he played, I think, like Roz's date in that episode. He doesn't do anything. He's just like the face that's there. And then he gets Drew Carey's show, and then he's like, he's Jethro in the Beverly Hillbillies movie. He was most recently on Veep. He's the voice of Batman in a lot of things.
He's in Office Space. He's like the weird, like, neighbor.
Oh, the neighbor guy, right? Yeah. Good guy.
You know what it was? I wasn't thinking, you were right. I wasn't thinking about Craig Ferguson not being Scottish in Drew Carey. I was thinking about the butler in
The Nanny
isn't American. British.
Yeah.
Which blew my mind when I learned that pretty recently.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? What the fuck?
Yeah. Because he's so British.
He's like from Ohio.
Oh, I had a crush on him as a kid. Hello.
Of course you did. Brett, of course you did.
Obvious.
Also his romantic relationship on that show was with a very much a lesbian character that they wouldn't let be a lesbian.
Yeah, they should have both been.
When she was so into the lead dude, it was like, no, you're not.
Cece?
I mean, that was a coded lesbian character.
Yeah, I want to do that show at some point just so I can get into my weird Niles, whatever.
There's a lot about that show that's like very strange. And then he went on to briefly have a backdoor pilot. Have you done backdoor pilot stuff?
Not yet.
So there's an episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch where they follow Sabrina's cousin who's made appearances. She's like a bad girl in the other world, in the magic world.
Yeah.
So she goes to a school on Earth for people from the magic world who are teens, like a boarding school type place. And he is the, like, dean of the school. And they, like, and the whole, Sabrina's in the beginning of the episode, and it's a backdoor pilot. So it's this thing of, like, what if this was a show?
I would love that.
It didn't go anywhere, but it would have been awesome, because there was also, like, there was a guy that was, like, hypnotizing girls to, like, make out with him, and, like, because he was using magic, like, to just, like, get girls. And then, like, because they had to keep it a secret that it was a magic school, magic reform school. And it's like the first, it basically follows her as the new character. And also, like, there's someone who doesn't do magic, like a woman is going to be a teacher there. And she doesn't know magic. And so it's like following the two of them.
That sounds so much better.
And it would have been cool.
But
they didn't make it. That's one of my favorite backdoor pilots that didn't go anywhere. That and when, Who's the Boss?
Oh, they had one?
There's a backdoor pilot that I think actually ran for a season where Sam goes to New York to a dance academy with Leah Remini, who is going to be the lead in the show about young girls like going to ballet school.
Oh, okay.
And she plays like a tough, hard girl.
Of course, that's Leah Remini's thing.
And I think that they actually may have filmed episodes of that. But it's like bare, like you know Sam's not going to be in it.
Right. For listeners that don't know what a backdoor pilot is, which I feel like you got it from context clues, it's when a series, basically there's an episode where instead of making a new pilot, they just take another show, like just do the pilot as an episode of this show. My example that I always go to is, I think the season 2 or 3 season finale of Golden Girls is called Empty Nest.
Yep.
And it is a backdoor pilot for Empty Nest, which happened and ran for like 8 years, except it starred totally different people. It started Paul Dooley and Rita Moreno.
It's like
I think.
Backdoor premise.
It is just so if you're doing like a Golden Girls binge watch, you will happen across an episode that has literally not. I think Dorothy is in it a little bit, and that's it. And it's boring. And you're like, why is this a thing? It's like because that's them testing out Empty Nest. Because
sometimes they'll take a character and spin them off. Obviously, Frasier is a big example of that. The most successful spinoff is NCIS, is a spinoff of JAG.
Oh, right.
So there's a whole, like, JAG is obviously like, you know, whatever. There's a whole episode with NCIS, and it's a backdoor pilot. And then for that show, because the first two seasons of NCIS aren't even in HD, because that's how old that show
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's been on for way too long.
That it also has its own spinoff. Ugh.
The Thursday night lineup on NBC, because Night Court was a Thursday night NBC show, which has a pedigree, that's a big deal. It is a pre-must-see TV, must-see show, which is what this podcast is named after. Yep, so, the Thursday night lineup when Night Court debuted was Gimme a Break,
okay,
Family Ties,
okay,
Cheers, Night Court, and Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
So, like... That's a pretty solid lineup.
I mean, you've still got Family Ties. Family Ties is bringing in your viewers.
And also, this is probably season 2 or 3 of Cheers.
So Cheers is not... 3. Cheers is not...
It's getting up there.
It's now... I mean, Frasier is now a reoccurring?
In 3, yes.
Okay.
I do think Frasier debuts in 3
as recurring. To me, the show Cheers is Cheers when you have Woody and you have Frasier is...
My poster!
Yes. When Frasier has more lines than the nerdy bald guy that is always in about Paul.
When
Frasier becomes more of a character than Paul, because for a while they're around the same era, that is when the show really, to me, takes off.
I love that... This is the unspoken thing. Is like, we haven't done Cheers yet. This is episode, I think, 22. Cheers is one of my favorite shows of all time. We haven't done it yet. I kind of like that. I kind of like seeing, like, how long can I go on this podcast?
How long until you're like...
Without doing Cheers.
Because I don't think you listed as an option, but peek behind the curtain. You gave me some episodes of things we could watch.
It's because, I'm going to keep hyping this. We're entering into the holiday gauntlet.
Oh, okay.
All of October, November, December are going to be holiday episodes of sitcoms, which is all Halloween, all Thanksgiving, all Christmas. And so spoiler alert, we're probably going to do Cheers at that point. And I'm trying not to repeat a show yet.
Yeah. Oh no. I mean, there's so much you can delve into.
So I'm trying to, we might do a Halloween Cheers, but I really want to do Thanksgiving Orphans, the Thanksgiving Cheers episode. So that is a such sneak peek. So 74 users rated this episode a 7.4 out of 10.
That's weird.
What would you think? Would you rate it higher than that? Lower than that?
Do you think
it's better than
that? You know what? I think 7.4. The fact that so many people rated it is what was weird to me, not the rating. I think it's good. I think it sets up the show as a... So here's the thing about pilots, right? Pilots, and then to a extent also first seasons, you have to kind of forgive.
Yeah.
Because no one's getting anything right. Like,
and it's very rare, which is why I celebrate, like, Friends and Cheers, perfect first seasons. They knew what that show was. They hit the ground running, and it is their all-time best series episodes in those first seasons. Seinfeld season 1?
I mean, a bunch of the characters aren't the characters yet.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all Larry David the first season.
Elaine isn't in the pilot.
Yeah,
like, so,
yeah, no.
Golden Girls season 1, fantastic. Golden but then Girls again, you're... Those are, like, three of those ladies' second or third sitcoms, so they are already... seasoned comedy legends and know what they're doing.
The first season of Designing Women, everyone knows what their role is, which is really interesting. They get broader and get to do more, but like everybody knows what they're doing on that show when they get there, which is why like shows like the first season of Parks and Rec is skippable.
It is not great.
They get a season 2 because there's, like, a hint of Ron Swanson in there.
Yeah, they...
But it's mostly just like, well, we're going to pull her another season.
Yeah,
like,
we'll figure it out. And then they figure it out.
They do figure it out.
And
it's great. But, like, that first season, I'm like, what are half these characters doing on this show?
It's making an optimistic show cynical when they realize don't fight the optimism and just go hard at it. And it does such a hard turn.
When they make Annie decide that she likes what's happening.
That's like the most arbitrary switch is like they came back for season two and Anne and Leslie are best friends.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time being like, that makes no sense. We didn't see it happen. And you know what? You don't see it happen, but it is a choice that may seem arbitrary, but it makes sense.
It makes the whole show better.
And it makes the whole show better. And just like go with it. Just go with it.
Because you'll get into it, I'm sure, someday. But even Ron Swanson still wants good things to happen for people that he cares about. He's just a weird... He just goes about it. He's just a libertarian.
He's got his rules. He's got rules
and he's got a weird choices and he wants things to go his way, but he also like wants people to be happy.
Yeah. Which is, you know...
And he cares a lot.
Which is why we watch these shows. It's because we want to be happy.
This show, I think 7.4 is yeah, I think as a pilot goes, it sets up the world you're in.
Right, yeah.
And you get, I want to see more of Harry.
I would go 7.5.
yeah. A little bit more.
Just a little bit more. Yeah. Who had the must-see performance in this episode? I feel like there's...
I mean, the show is, the pilot is just Harry. Yeah. It's all Harry.
There's like, kind of no competition.
I think Bull is setting up an interesting minor character, but you know that he is not the major player.
No.
He is comic relief. He is cut twos. He will get an episode where he falls in love in season 5 or 6, which I believe is true. They're going to give him his episode, but he's not getting his episode in season 1.
No. And he's not really... I mean, Harry is the only character in this episode that we watched that has stuff to do. Like, actually has, like... has a high comedic hurdle that he clears. Like, a jump that he clears. I mean, also, the pilot, whether it lives or dies, is also on his shoulders. I was expecting more of an ensemble pilot, because the show is an ensemble show.
This pilot banks the success on, do you like this character? We're going to give you other characters that you can like, but he's the judge, and we didn't call it, like, Judge Stone, but we... could have.
Yeah, this very much could have been like Judge Harry or like something.
Yeah.
Or Harry, parentheses.
Harry's
He's
court.
A judge. Harry's court.
Like,
Harry's court.
But like, they call it Night Court because they're banking on you liking him. And I think he succeeds. I think I don't care about a bunch of the other minor characters yet. Like, I don't care that they don't like that he's so unorthodox.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay.
I'm on board. I'll come back.
I like this guy. This guy cares a lot. Because that's the thing that's really interesting about Harry Stone. He's in this pilot. Yes, he's a magician. Yes, he's young. Yes, he's goofy. Yes, he's using a double-sided coin. But he wants that marriage to do well.
He has a whole speech about, like, I just want to talk. We're talking. This is what you get inside people's heads. It's very, like, heartfelt speech.
Like, you get a sense that this guy wants to be a judge to not... punish people, but to like help people.
Yeah, like, so I like him.
Yeah, it's and I want to see more of it. You know,
must other people see this episode?
No. We just told you more about the plot than they do in later seasons. They never acknowledge that how he got to be a judge. They just accept it and move on.
Right.
You want Marky Post? You want Charlie Robinson. You want more characters that you will remember in the show.
So you should want to watch a season 4 through 9 episode.
Yes.
From what I understand, it also gets a lot more aggressively cartoonish and surreal.
Yeah, which... I mean, I don't know if surreal is the right term for it, but it does get more outlandish. The cases get weirder because they start running out of normal cases. There are episodes where they don't deal with cases at all.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, the courtroom, there's like a kitchen area, a kitchenette, like a cafe, cafeteria style area, where you see a lot of stuff later in the show because they're tired of the courtroom, they're tired of the hallway,
they're tired of the
judge's chambers. I would find the episode that Mel Torme shows up in because I remember really liking it, and I think that would be way better. Or the episode where Bull falls in love. It's a tiny, tiny blonde girl.
Aww.
And I think she's like a quiet... bailiff who then like gets like real loud and mean when she needs to, and he like falls in love with her. Like, that might just be headcanon in my head, Because I also might be confusing...
That's a great pilot. You're a spec script you just wrote.
I might be confusing her with Latka's wife.
Oh, Carol Kane.
Carol Kane.
Right. Who is so great.
Who is so great. I might be confusing those things. But I do know that Bull does fall in love in the show.
Which you would have to.
Yeah.
I guess... Yeah, that's it. I guess, yeah. We've covered Night Court. And we found it... innocent. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not guilty.
Yes. Case dismissed.
Case dismissed.
It's a fun show with a great song, and it never gets more New York than the theme and the credits, which is kind of a bummer because New York is not a character in the show.
And I do like the gallery seems to be a character, which I'm fine with getting my like New York vibes from the hodgepodge collection of weirdos watching everything happen. And I am excited to do a season 4-9 episode at some point. I'm going to do one of those the next time we get to Night Court.
You want to see Harry and Marky Post like...
Right, and I want to see what this show actually is. Because I've only ever seen a season 1 episode and a season 2 episode. So I still haven't even seen... I've seen the Robinson. I've seen the replacement court clerk. So I know him.
Like he's I said, great. That show gets better because he's there.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to like check out your stuff or talk to you about Night Court?
I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/PatBear. I'm on all social media as Pat Bear, except for Instagram. It's Pat Bear, ITS Pat Bear, because I didn't think Instagram was going to be a thing. I run Twitch streams twice a week on Thursday and Saturday. You can find that information on my Twitter account. But if you like model kit building and Lego building, I do that instead of playing video games because everybody does that. So I do model kits. I do stuff in New York. My YouTube channel has lots of videos, including one that Brett was in that actually just got a rebound in popularity.
Oh, which one?
Our appearance at GamerX East.
Right, where I talked about Elton John's I'm Still Standing music video.
a photo from that where Austin and I are interrogating Danielle.
Yeah.
Is like, as they're promoting this GamerX, that is making the rounds as like a promotional photo. And so then people are like, what's this from? And then I've been linking it to the YouTube and it bumped up a little bit.
It's fun. It's always a fun watch. It's a fun show.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for coming out and talking about Night Court during the day. And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks to my guest, Pat Bear, for dropping by and talking about Night Court with me this week. Next week on the show, I will be discussing the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode, A Night at the Opera. Guest starring who? I don't know. A Night at the Opera is in Season 3, is Episode 9 of Season 3, and you can watch that Fresh Prince episode on Amazon or iTunes, or, depending on the timing of syndication, maybe MTV or TBS or any of the, like, dozens of channels that rerun Fresh Prince. Until then, please send your questions about sitcoms to musthaveseentv@gmail.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, please, please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in iTunes. If you do, I will read it on the air if it's good and not negative and hateful. I don't have time for hate in my life. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can read the words that I write at Decider.com, including a piece about Night Court's gay episode in Season 2. You can also check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team, and thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all of y'all for listening, and I'll see y'all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.